Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes checking in on you on a Thursday morning here. It is fight week. And for all you geeks out there, may the 4th be with you. All right, so on today's show, we're going to discuss the latest news in mixed martial arts, as well as continue our preview of UFC 288, which takes place this Saturday in Newark, New Jersey. We got a title fight at the top of the bill with Aljamain Sterling and Henry Cejudo. And, of course, Goz and I will be hosting a watch-along on Saturday, as we always do for the UFC pay-per-views. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific is the start time for the four featured prelims on the fight card, followed by the five fights on the pay-per-view. And, of course, the pay-per-view is... you know, where some of you might drop off. There's been a lot lately with BKFC and some boxing and the WrestleMania last month. Well, I guess WrestleMania is no longer a pay-per-view, but still, if you choose not to get it, we understand. We'll be your eyes and ears, and we can tell you what's happening in real time. And if you decide to get it, then just watch along with us. All right. So that and a special treat, Rich Franklin will join us as well. On the show, he is a UFC Hall of Famer. He was a former UFC middleweight champion. Basically, he preceded Anderson Silva in the middleweight pecking order. Let me go backwards here. It goes Izzy, Pejeda, Izzy, Whitaker. Who did Whitaker be? I think Whitaker jumped in there because somebody retired. Holy cow. Anyway, yeah. Well, you just keep going backwards, and I guess there was a Wyman and a Rockhold in there somewhere, and then eventually Anderson Silva and Rich Franklin. So there you go. I should know this stuff, so I'm going to have to go in there and see where I messed up. But anyway, oh, GSP. That's right. GSP had won from Bisping, and then he retired, and that's when they had to fill that void. Anyway, we'll start the show, and I'll see if I can get my act together and pull up the actual lineage of the middleweight division. All right, Goz. So, are you curious about the UFC middleweight lineage?
Sure.
Might as well go all in at this point, right? Since I brought it up, since I'm a big old pie hole. In 2001, Dave Minay defeated Gil Castillo at UFC 33. Marilla Bustamante defeated Dave Minay. Evan Tanner defeated David Terrell. And I guess what happened was Bustamante had left for... oh, no, defended versus Matt Lindland and then vacated. He went to Pride, as you all know. He's part of Brazilian top team. If you want to connect the dots, Big Nog, Little Nog, Ricardo Arona, and some of the other guys. I guess Anderson Silva eventually, although Anderson Silva started with Shootbox at one point. Then we get to Evan Tanner. He defeated David Terrell. Rich Franklin defeated Evan Tanner, the late Evan Tanner. That's an interesting story, folks. If you ever want to just pick a figure in our sport to kind of read up about Evan Tanner and his, I guess, his place in the sport and what he tried to do. He tried to really help some fighters and create a fighter house back in the day. He was an adventurer guy, and then eventually it is believed that he basically took his own life, albeit a different way, by basically pushing the limits of nature and just getting out there and almost not wanting to come back. But he was pretty beloved. Anyway, Franklin defeated him. Anderson defeated Franklin. Weidman defeated Anderson. Rockhold defeated Weidman. Bisping defeated Rockhold. There you go. That's what I was missing. GSP defeated Bisping. Yeah, GSP defeated Bisping. Whitaker defeats Yoel Romero to win the interim title because St. Pierre vacated. And then Izzy beats Gastelum for the interim title. Izzy then defeats Robert Whittaker to become the undisputed. Fajita defeats Izzy. Izzy defeats Alex Fajita. Wow, a lot's gone down in the middleweight division.
Yeah, for sure.
Who's your Mount Rushmore middleweights?
Oh, man. Of just the UFC or all mixed martial arts?
Well, I guess both. But yeah, UFC.
Israel Adesanya, Anderson Silva, those two are must. That leaves two more spots. You know who, surprisingly, I got to go back and look at stats. But I wouldn't be shocked if somebody like a Gegard Mousasi kind of slipped in there with all the thing. Because he's won a belt. Well, he's won two belts. And he's got
decent wins. One of them was the light heavyweight belt at Strikeforce.
That was, that's right, huh? King Mo took that off of him, right?
Right.
Henderson, so he won one belt.
Was a middleweight champ. It was a welterweight champ at Pride, which is the same as being the middleweight champ in the UFC. And then he was a Strikeforce light heavyweight champion.
But you got to go through like a lot of where was most of the damage done for him. You know what I mean? That one's the first one that came up, but I'd have to see where most of the damage was done because we're just looking at middleweight, right?
Rockhold won the Strikeforce and UFC middleweight belt and beat Weidman. Weidman does have three wins, though. Three title defenses, whereas Rockhold has one. Franklin, I believe, had two title defenses. I don't know. That one's one that you and I, we're going to give ourselves the assignment. And when we report to duty, probably next Thursday, we're going to reveal our middleweight Mount Rushmore of all time, and then the UFC middleweight Mount Rushmore. So the UFC one, you had to have accomplished most of your stuff in the UFC, obviously, and then the other one will allow for the Strikeforce and Bellators and Prides of the world to maybe chime in. But this will be a little interesting assignment that we'll give each other.
Bisping, I have a problem with because he's got good wins, but man, there are quite a few that I just don't feel like are wins.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's rough. But you know what? I can maybe comfortably say right now, just thinking, if you're doing Mount Rushmores and all that, is the middleweight division the worst division of all the divisions? If you go through history, because think about how easy it is to do like heavyweight, light heavyweight, lightweight, featherweight, like. I don't know that the quality of middleweights have been up to par as far as all the other divisions are concerned.
I think it's ahead of welterweight. Welterweight's got some studs. Well, Hughes, GSP, Kamaru, and Tyron all had at least four title defenses. Well, then there's Shamrock and Miletich. I take it back. You're right. I was going to say only because Matt Serra snuck in there and Leon Edwards is yet to really prove himself, I guess, currently. But maybe flyweight is one of them. No, they got Demetrius Johnson flexing for him. The bantamweights have Dominic Cruz. The middleweights have Anderson Silva. I don't know. Don't give us another assignment, though. We'll stick to this one first, and then we'll figure that one out. All right, folks. Have you seen any of the three embeddeds? Is it doing anything to sell pay-per-views? You and I are in. The hardcores that listen to the show, they're in. They'll figure it out one way or another. We're all going to watch it. But are those guys appealing to the audience for this Saturday's card, Cejudo and Sterling? They're kind of nice guys, but they kind of throw shade at each other a little bit. Muhammad and Burns, nice guys, not too much shade. I don't know. I feel like it is fight week, but for a Thursday, it's not popping yet.
I saw the first one. What I can tell you is this. You know what somewhat sold me on it? If I'm putting on the pants of a fan. Last week during the UFC and a little bit during, I think it might have been hockey or some or baseball. They kept playing this like this promo for it. And it looked like they put a little bit more effort into it. You know, we're always talking about how Triple C is always saying they didn't promote me as much. Aljamain Sterling kind of says the same thing. But they actually gave them not just like a stock song. They gave them a cool one. I can't remember which one it was. It seemed like they put a little bit more into that one. And that one, believe it or not, got me a little bit more pumped up. Mm-hmm. But as far as I've only seen one embedded, and it was kind of the same stuff you see all the time. I'm not there yet if I'm a casual fan, especially with everything going on, because playoffs on both sides, hockey and basketball, have been phenomenal so far. So, yeah, I'm still not there yet. But the main event is kind of what pulls you in.
What this card is missing, and Cejudo and Sterling could possibly have double dipped a little bit, right, and served its own purpose. We're missing that featured bout that has a little bit of heat in it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm going to give you an example. Let me pull it up real fast. But this will kind of – I'll go back a few years. Probably about four years to this one. Let me pull it up here. It was UFC. Here we go. UFC 239 in Las Vegas. Here's the main event. John Jones versus Thiago Santos. Hey, it's John Jones, for crying out loud, against the hard-hitting Thiago Santos. Should be good. Santos wasn't really a trash talker. Jones is just Jones. And then the co-main event, you had Amanda Nunes versus Holly Holm, arguably the GOAT of male MMA and the GOAT of female MMA. Maybe not even arguably. That was just it, right? Two title fights. But guess what we had goes for the rest of the card? Jorge Masvidal versus Ben Askren. This is the one where they were needling each other. It was the featured bout. There was some trash talk going on. And so this was supporting the two title fights, which kind of speak on their own. Whether the champs want to talk trash or not, they speak on their own. They stand on their own. But this one is like, you know, this one's kind of moving the needle a little bit. To be fair, you also had Jan Blachowicz versus Luke Rockhold and Michael Chiesa versus Diego Sanchez. And so where is that on this card? Thank you, UFC, for saving us and giving us Gilbert Burns versus Bilal Muhammad. But thank God you did, because we lost Mozar Evloev versus Bryce Mitchell, which really wasn't getting too animated, to tell you the truth. But this card really, like, they patched it together at the very end. Those two welterweights, I salute them for going five rounds and being there. But now we drop off to Jessica Andrade and Yan Xionan. Crone Gracie versus Charles Jourdain. And I believe filling in for that other fight that I mentioned will be Diego Lopez versus Mozar Evloev. So, you know, come on, man. Andrade versus Yan Xionan, I accept because they are quality strawweights. Mozar Evloev, undefeated, but not a lot of people know a lot about him, and maybe Mitchell was going to be the one that brought more eyeballs to it. Who knows? But Crone Gracie, who hasn't fought in 4 years against Charles Jourdain, I don't know, man. Like, pay-per-views need to be more stacked than this.
Here's the other thing you have to take in consideration is about, well, 1 week ago, we all shelled out money for BKFC. And a week before that, we all shelled out money for boxing, right? Mm-hmm. So we're already in the hole, right? I'm not one of these guys, but the married man, when the wife says, "So what are you doing this weekend?" He's going to have to say, "I'm spending another $80 and I'm spending another 8 hours away from you." That's got to be worth something, right? Because she's going to counter back with, "And you're also taking out the trash, mowing the lawn, taking the kids to this, doing that." So whatever's on the other side of that has to be worth it. And I don't know if this card is worth it. I think maybe that married guy goes, fuck it. I'll go to the recital. I'll go take the kid to the soccer game. You know, that sort of thing. I can't get out of this one. It's not worth it. You've already spent a lot on combat sports that aren't the UFC.
And we're also following a card that was dookie last week. except for the main event, I wasn't too excited about much. Even with Kyle Borayo going 4-0 in the UFC, 14-1 overall or whatever he is, it was not a sexy card at all. I was only looking forward to the bantamweights because I love me some bantamweights. But that card was dookie. And so then this one following it, honestly, they should just had last week off and just brought over Song Yadong and Ricky Simone to this card and Kyle Borayo versus Mikhail Olenechek or whoever. Mm-hmm. Maybe Waldo Cortez against the other cat, Marcos Rogério de Lima. Bring them over as well. Maybe the top three fights over there, bring them over to the UFC 288 and let's just run with it. Also this weekend is Canelo Alvarez, by the way. There's a lot of people that love boxing and MMA, and some people might choose to spend it on Canelo Alvarez. So this is a poor showing from the UFC. Not poor, but average showing from the UFC. And it's Thursday, and I'm not as excited about it. And I the casual fans that I'm throwing it to, my family and friends on social media, they're not biting back. They're not asking me the questions they normally do. Who you got, G? You got a parlay for us? Who do you think will win? It's like they've tuned out. So that I think has a little bit to do with the fact that it's not as stacked of a card.
Yeah.
Sterling doesn't sell yet or at all or much or however you want to categorize it. Cejudo maybe does in a way, but he's also been gone for 3 years. I don't know. Whatever. It's taking place on Saturday, and once the bets are being thrown out there, trust me, we'll be into it. So join us on Saturday for our watch-along, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be there to call 9 fights, including Marina Rodriguez versus Verna Jandiroba, Chaos Williams versus Rolando Bedoya, Kennedy and Chukwu versus Devin Clark, Drew Dover versus Matt Frivola, and then, of course, that main card that I told you guys about just a second ago. Goes, what did you think of Conor McGregor just kind of appealing himself, saddling up to WWE? He calls out WWE champ Roman Reigns, mentions SummerSlam. It's like, you know, I wake up to some of the stuff that happens overseas because he's an Irish fighter who's over there on that side of town a lot. And when he's in Vegas, he's a go to bed at 4 a.m. in the morning guy. But sometimes I wake up to his antics, you know, and I look at it and he still makes me laugh. He still makes me giggle. I still get a kick out of him. But there is a point where I'm like, enough, 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 enough. When the fuck are you coming back to MMA? This reality show is going to start with Chandler. There's nothing on the books as far as when you guys are going to fight. You guys are going to build it up. You're going to get us excited. But it's like, he might take on the winner of Edwards versus Usman. He might fight Masvidal if he beats Burns. He might fight Nate in the part three. He's ready for Jake Paul if need be. He faces off versus Mike Perry. He's everywhere, but where he needs to be, and that's on a fight card versus Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler's starting to lose his patience, but I think Michael Chandler's reading the writing on the wall. He's even saying, look, I'm not going to blow up Dana and Hunter and keep asking them, kind of like the jilted girlfriend or you know the that's just not getting attention or whatever. I think he's starting to feel that, but there's just nothing on the books with Conor McGregor, but yet he's out there poking bears and doing everything but committing to A, USADA, B, a fight.
So that's my question, is what is the game that he's playing? Because if you think about it, he throws out this WWE thing that makes zero sense. And just last week, he was not just at BKFC, but like involved in BKFC, in the ring, getting in people's faces. I have to imagine if you're the UFC, you're probably not too happy with this, right? You know, this is your biggest star. Any time that this dude has, you want him promoting your product and promoting himself in your product, because that's big dollar signs for you. So what is it that Conor's doing? I'm not really sure, because who knows? You know, like in boxing, pretty much every fight purse is negotiated at a time, right? And in MMA, I think there are probably some fighters that can maybe do that. I want a new contract every couple fights, you know, even though they sign sometimes 8-fight contracts. I don't know if he's trying to get more money out of the UFC or what the deal is, but he does have the reality show coming up. And I have to imagine there has to be some promotion for that, some stuff he's going to have to do. So I think that's going to be interesting when people interview him. We're going to be able to ask him these questions. And yeah, you could tell Michael Chandler's getting a little frustrated too, because how long does he want to sit around? You know, he's only getting older. And this was kind of like probably his sail off into the sunset fight. And now that might go away.
For sure. He hasn't fought since November of 2022, which was the fight against Dustin Poirier. So it's been about half of a year now since he fought. He's well recovered from that fight. He just turned 37 in April. And so I'm sure what he'd like to know is, like, I don't think he wants to fight him on Saturday. But what he'd like to know is, when am I fighting him? You know, like, what are we looking at? August, September? Are we looking at a whole year? And even then, with this other guy entertaining everything but fighting and not getting in the USADA pool, what is going on? It's got to be pretty frustrating. And then this whole thing with Francis Ngannou. I love free agency for fighters. I hope it benefits them and they can stick it to the game and get paid. I always root for that to happen to athletes. I think it will happen with Francis, but boy, this is one of the most complicated free agencies I've ever seen in my life.
For sure. And to go back really quick to Connor, I'm thinking, okay, the reality show is going to come out. And that's going to be weeks of these two talking about potentially fighting each other, right? Whose hand is that going to play into more, though? Is that more pressure for Connor to actually make the fight? Or is it more pressure for the UFC to make the fight, right? We just fed you, what is it, 10 weeks or something of these guys going back and forth, and now we're not going to deliver on a fight? Or is it Connor? I don't think it's Connor, because Connor's kind of ran away from fights before, you know? I wouldn't say ran away, but, you know, everybody thought him and Nate were going to dance a third time, and that just didn't happen. And he seems to be okay with it. So I'm wondering if maybe that's Connor's play, is I need to put more pressure on these guys and hope to get more money out of them, maybe.
Connor's best play, in my opinion, is the least talented fighter that can help him sell the most pay-per-views.
Right.
That's what I think at this point.
That's been his
recipe. That he has the least prepared for. Like, Khabib would be a nightmare, but he'd be a big payday. So would it be worth him to get in there and put his wrestling boots on and do a six-month camp and try and close the gap? Perhaps. He hates him. He knows it would sell well. He probably feels like, if I can crack him, I steal everything that Khabib has, including the win over me and that O, that goose egg in the loss column. So he might see that way. Islam Makhachev, he might look at, well, he's not Khabib popular, and he's got Khabib style fighting. Nah, I'm good. Poirier, he might just have to accept that the other guy is just a sharper striker than him at this point and has his number. Possibly, I don't know, maybe the ego won't let him do it. But, you know, there's probably some guys out there that I think the way Nate fought against Ferguson and he slowed down, I think he might think that's the guy I want, because that's a big payday. Right. And Nate does have great submissions. He did submit me, but only because I went for the takedown. I was exhausted. So if I can come in shape and just throw hands, I might be able to win that trilogy, make a lot of money. You see what I'm saying? So
it's like a cowboy fight
on stuff like that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the strategy of the cowboy fight, right? You look at guys like Oliveira. Hell no. I don't want to get out grappled out there and look like a fool. Who else are we looking at? Justin Gaethje. I don't want to go out there and get knocked out like that. Like, there's really not that many options anymore for him.
This is true. Anyway, and as far as Ngannou goes, what do you think is the latest with what you're hearing? Some people are saying he's headed to the PFL. One Championship says they're out. BKFC says they're out. The UFC has stated that they're out, although we always feel like they're in. I think Bellator probably is out, personally. Boxing is still an option. I suppose PFL could still happen, and along with boxing, that would allow them to box and then come over and do some sort of a fight on their pay-per-view series, maybe. UFC is only a possibility, I think, if they realize that it's too big of a fight versus him and John Jones in a stadium for them to not just swallow their pride and bring the big man back and give him either a ton of money or concede something.
I don't think it's time to hit the panic button just yet. Things are looking odd, but like I think it was Chael Sonnen. He's just burying him, and I don't know that he's at that point yet. Because you know, all it takes is just one big fight. Doesn't even really have to be a huge fight in boxing, but one fight is going to make up for all of that, right? And I don't know. I just don't feel like one championship was a player at all. I know he met with them, but I think he just wanted to push his limits with them and see what companies are willing to do or use that as leverage against another company. But I just don't think that was ever really there. And I think one championship kind of looked at that and felt that energy. And I think that's why Chaudhry did what he did and kind of put that out, like, to kind of not help him in the negotiation by saying, we are completely out. This guy wanted too many things or whatever. Because he could have just said no and left it at that. But I think he realized what was going on, and I think he wanted to pay Francis back by eliminating one of the cards off of the table, right? And so now Francis has got to go back. I have a feeling deep down inside he knows what he's going to do, and he's just trying to pull out every last cent or you know, little thing that he could throw into a contract. But I have a feeling he has something set now.
Did you see where Chaudhry said that one of the things Francis wanted was the ability to dictate how much the guy that fights him makes?
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of a lot, isn't it? Like, I don't know. I get that his freedom is a big deal for him, which means, I guess, if I want to box, I want to box. If I want to do MMA, I want to do MMA. You can't tell me what I can or can't do. But the whole thing with fighter advocacy, a spot on the board, I don't know. Like, part of me is impressed by him maybe wanting to take that sort of a stance for the fighters. Mm-hmm. But remember, if you're on the board of one championship, I don't know that that's going to help many fighters other than the ones over at one championship. And I would say that if you wanted to take that sort of a lead in the UFCs, where that's where we're all looking for that, you know what I mean? An association or a union. The UFC is kind of what I think stirs the pot, moves the needle. Whatever happens there trickles to other organizations. They pick up on it or whatever. But I was impressed when he said, hey, look, I wanted to fight for the fighters in the UFC. And to that, I took it as, hey, look, we're going from Reebok to Venom, and this is how it looks. And that's where Francis comes in and goes, as a representative of the fighters, we would like a spot on the thigh of our shorts, of the kit. Or we would like this concession or whatever. That I really thought was commendable, if that was exactly what he was looking for. Or we're looking for all finishes to be bonus 50,000. Or all finishes on pay-per-views, at least, to be bonus 50,000. Or how about a second or third airline ticket and hotel room for my corner, or international, only one international fight in a row, and then I don't have to do it again, because obviously when you fly international, it seems like you get nicked on the taxes. So little things like that, where fighters are willing to do some stuff every once in a while, but not get picked on and be punching bags. That I was starting to get behind, if that's exactly what he was trying to do. But he's no longer with the UFC, so to do that over at one, I don't know. I haven't heard the suffrage that fighters at one may or may not have.
It's kind of unrealistic, some of the stuff, but I don't know. I guess I would throw it back at him. And if I was one championship, I'd say, okay, well, here is what we have allotted for this fight. You divide it up. And I'd be curious, you know, if it's $2 million, is now it's in Francis's court. You know, is Francis going to give his opponent $1 million and he gets $1 million? Is Francis going to take 18 and give him two? You know, like, I don't know. That'd be kind of interesting to kind of see where Francis's mindset is. Yeah, I mean, that's just difficult, you know? Like, how would you even get a fight done at that point?
You brought up Chael Sonnen's name, and he basically has hinted that he's headed towards the PFL. I would be lying if I didn't also hear that rumor, but at the same time, I can't expand more than that just because we protect our sources. We hear rumors from time to time, but at the same time, you just don't know what you're hearing. But we had heard something like that as well, almost probably, what, a month ago, 3 weeks ago? Like, it's just that we felt like it wasn't anything that needed to be reported or anything like that. It sounded more like this is just kind of what I'm hearing type thing, but we'll see. Maybe he has already made his decision and this was just the final round of interviews or whatever you call it, recruitment, and maybe the big man will have a decision soon. One last thing about Francis, and then we'll leave it alone. Could Francis, who lives in Las Vegas, request a meeting with Hunter and Dana and go, let's start over. I'm about to sign, but I'm not feeling 100% certain. I'm tucking my tail between my legs. What can we do here? Do you think that even exists? Or would Dana say, fuck off? Like, no, man, we're done. Like, it's over. What do you think?
I think Dana would tell him to fuck off because right now, I'm not saying that wouldn't happen later. But right now, I mean, it also depends on what it is that he has dangling on the other side, right? If it's boxing and I'm Dana White, I say, go ahead, go to boxing, get knocked out by somebody, make a lot of money. But when you come back, are you still the baddest man on the planet? If you just got KO'd by Tyson Fury, you know, do I need to give you this kind of money? Maybe not, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll find something out hopefully within the next few weeks. I think this thing, at least what I do feel good about, is that it's winding down. Some of it has to do with the public outcry, the revelations from some of the promoters in the game that they're just no longer in the business. So it seems like he just has less options. The boxing world is one I'm not familiar with. You know, Wilder, Fury, Joshua, you know, who would fight him? What money's out there? And then you got these weird events that take place in Saudi, I should say the Middle East, whether it's Qatar, Saudi Arabia, wherever. I'm not familiar with all the different cities and countries. But when I say the Middle East, I think everyone's familiar with what I'm saying. The oil money that's out there, a lot of rich, you know, what do we call them? Kings or royal families. Yeah, that can just, for their own entertainment, put a bag out there for two guys to entertain. I think Floyd, I don't know if Floyd ever did it, but wasn't he supposed to fight some guy on a skyscraper? You know what I mean? Just ridiculous stuff out there. I could see maybe some sort of a little pit stop exhibition, something like that, and then something involving MMA. Anyway, all right, guys. So just to go over some of the latest news, I mentioned Bryce Mitchell out. Did you see his shoulder? When he did one of the countdowns, it was really purple, right? But that was an unusual shade of purple. It didn't look like an injury, and which now made that a bruise to me. And trust me, I know very little about the physiology of athletes and spotting injuries and scars and limps and this and that. But luckily, as I was scanning social media, a lot of people were saying that what that looked like was some sort of either a lotion or defense or something that's been applied to an area that might have some sort of a fungal irritation of the skin, I guess, and coming from his environment of farming, you know? So not staff from a gym or not ringworm from training or whatever, but something associated with his personal life. And had you heard that and seen that? And if not, what do you think of what you saw with what happened with Bryce Mitchell, with him now being out of his fight versus Moslar Evloev?
I mean, to me, it looked like something torn. If you look at Cody Rhodes in WWE, I believe he tore his pec, and it has that type of coloring to it. But I wouldn't be shocked if it was something like that. You know, in farming, you probably carry a lot of things on your shoulder. So I don't know. I'll send you a pic, though, of Cody Rhodes and see if you see what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, that's just, I figured I'd throw it out there because when I read it, I go, okay, well, that kind of, I guess, could make sense, I suppose. Because it was gnarly to see that. It was like purplish and pinkish. I don't know, man. It felt like I was staring at a reflection of Northern Lights or something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay. So, folks, let's throw a couple last reminders here your way. Saturday night, our watch along with myself and Goes, and we're still trying to maybe have a guest fighter or notable with us at the Sticky Pod Studio, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, 4 fights on the prelims, and 5 fights on the pay-per-view. It'll be fun, man. Look, I know I've kind of dissed the card a little bit, but once you sit down in that chair, and once the parlays have been put out, once the drinks and the food start flowing, it don't get better than UFC fight nights, especially those pay-per-views. And we do have some quality fights. We just got to sift our way to get to them. It's not as stacked as some of the other cards, even just the Miami card that just took place, UFC 287. That definitely was a deeper card. I think we can all agree on that. But pretty historic. Each of these guys is trying to inch closer to maybe overtaking Dominic Cruz as the greatest bantamweight ever. Can they get it done in this fight? Possibly. We don't know. We'll see what the results are. Both of them also teasing that, hey, I might win the fan and then move out to fight Volkanovski. Both guys are, you know, trying to make history with Sterling trying to become a champ, and with Triple C trying to become C4. So that, to me, makes it interesting. And, of course, Gilbert Burns and Bilal Muhammad trying to chase down Colby Covington and get that shot at Leon Edwards. The champ don't want Colby Covington. The UFC does. Fans and media, they're split. So one of these guys, if they can really put a stamp and an exclamation point on their performance, a great post-fight interview, stranger things have happened, especially if both guys are available and ready to fight. And guess what? That's what got them this fight, because they were both ready and willing to fight. So maybe they can jump in there, because when the UFC needs you, that's when they will definitely bend over backwards for you. All right, we're going to close with an interview that we did with Rich Franklin earlier this week. Rich A. Franklin, former middleweight champion in the UFC. He's a executive with one championship. So we're going to be referencing the card that's taking place tomorrow night, Cinco de Mayo, in Denver, Colorado, with Demetrius Johnson versus Adriano Moraes. It's one FC 10. It's their trilogy bout. They're 1-1, and it could be Demetrius Johnson's last fight. So we're going to go a little bit down memory lane, talk about that card, and you know what he's been up to as of late. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. We bow out at this point. We'll see you guys on Saturday. Go out and be a champion. Take care, folks. What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back with another superstar from the world of combat sports. He is a former UFC middleweight champion. He's a UFC Hall of Famer and now an exec for one championship. Don't forget, one championship coming your way. Cinco de Mayo, baby. It's this Friday with arguably the greatest of all time, Demetrius Johnson versus Adriano Moraes at the top of the bill. If you are one of the 210 Amazon Prime subscribers, you need to get it because it's free and it's going to be a lot of action. Rich, welcome back to Junkie Radio. How are you, sir?
Always good to be back here with you guys.
Thank you.
Yep, and we love having you on the show. We get to talk about some old stories, a current card, all your travels. Well, you had quite an adventure just getting here. So you just flew in from Singapore, I take it?
It was Bangkok. The event was in the last event was in Bangkok. Okay. A week and a half ago or whatever. And yeah, so it was actually on my way out there. And I'd minimized my time on ground So I was only actually in Bangkok for 4.5 days because that's all I needed to be there for the event, because we had this event coming up this coming Friday, December 5th. And so on my way out there, I missed my connection. I only had an hour and 5 minute connection in Istanbul Airport. And if you've ever been to Istanbul Airport, then it is the size of, it's its own city. Like, it probably has its own municipal police or something. But I missed that connection, and that gave me a 10 hour layover. So door to door, from my front door to my hotel room door, was 41 and a half hours.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, that's, and then, you know, because I got there later, instead of being on the ground 4.5 days, I'm only there for like 4 days. And then 4 days later, I'm back on a plane and it's 33 hours back home again. So, you know, over like a 5 day period, I had flown like 70 plus, almost 80 hours.
So who was the turkey that made this, you know, 1 hour delay here in Istanbul to cut it so close?
That, it's funny that you say that. It's actually Turkish Airlines.
Oh.
That's the turkey that did it, yeah. Now, okay. Our travel team booked it, but you would assume that they could book that under the pretense that
you're on business too, right?
Right, yeah, yeah. So that's the crazy thing. Like, I'm the first one. I was literally the first person off the plane because I knew that we landed late. And, well, I knew we took off late, but I didn't know. I mean, you can make that time up in the air. We took off like 15 minutes late. And when you're talking about double-digit hour flights, like, right, making up 15 minutes is not difficult to do. True. And so when I got off the plane, I saw the board, and I'm like, last call already. And yeah, I got to make the mad sprint for, you know, I don't know, 3/4 mile or something getting through this airport. So yeah, I didn't have a chance.
All right. Well, you have the conditioning and the cardio to shake off the jet lag and get ready for this massive event taking place in Colorado, where the original UFC started, where BKFC just had a great show, won championship, already sold out.
Yeah.
Already sold out their event, and they're coming in with heavy artillery. Maybe their greatest trilogy ever, I don't know. But come on, Adriano Moraes and DJ, those are some studs right there, yes, mixing it up in the main event.
This is going to be a great one. A Cinco de Mayo, big fight day. Denver, Colorado. This has been a long time coming for one championship. So we're really, really excited about this show. I'm personally excited about this show because I was living in Singapore. I moved back to the U.S. to put a lot of effort into bringing the events to the U.S. And so this is the first one here, the trilogy, Adriano Moraes, Demetrius. Two great fights between these two guys. They almost ended picturesque, identically, knees to the head. DJ was down. Adriano technically wasn't, but he was against the cage. And so the two finishing photos look almost the same. And I like this matchup as a fan, you know. Demetrius also is, I don't know if you guys, he's teased possibly retirement this. Yeah. So, you know, as a fan, like both of Adriano, I was actually at the organization when Adriano won his title to begin with. And I've trained with DJ on the mat while I was competing.
Pancreation?
Yeah.
AMC, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
How long were you there, by the way?
Well, I started working with them after my first Anderson Silva loss. And I was just, you know, I had my coaching staff in Cincinnati, and I didn't want to abandon my coaching staff because we were doing a lot of the right things. But being in Cincinnati, we were also isolated from the rest of the MMA world. So I wanted to get an outside look at what I had going on in my camp. So yeah, I started from that point on, pretty much worked with Pancration.
You left there. The cold for the rain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. It's funny. I was just talking to, you remember, you know, Monty Cox. Mm-hmm. So I was just talking to Monty.
Street fighting championship.
Yeah, he's writing a book, and I've been talking to him the last couple of weeks, and we were talking about me going up there to AMC, and when he had recommended that me training up there, I'm like, oh man, it's such a trek from Cincinnati. Like, it's not like one of those places where you can just take like a nice little weekend like training trip. It's, you know, you're fully committed on that like 5.5-6 hour flight to get up there. So yeah, that was a big commitment. But no, I worked with DJ back in the day then, and it's been awesome to see him obviously in his career develop and become the GOAT. He's amazing. But Adriano is one of the best, you know, champs in our organization.
For sure.
Had the most accolades before DJ had defeated him, and he also defeated DJ. So this trilogy between the two of them, stylistically, the way that they match up, I like this. Adriano has good reach and he has great footwork. He utilized it in the first match. He actually utilized it really well in the second match. It took DJ some time to solve that puzzle. That wasn't a really easy victory for him, and I think the elbow that DJ landed in the second round really changed the tone of the fight. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he was on the bottom in the guard after they hit the ground, and he cut Adriano and you know, opened him up, and I think that kind of changed the dynamic a little bit.
Goes, I know you're chomping at the bit, but let me just get one real follow-up real quick.
Yeah.
What was DJ like back when you knew him? Give us an early DJ story, or just what what his skill set was like and how it matured to what it is, where this guy can do everything at a high level, a knee, a punch, grappling, a takedown to armbar midair. You know, like he's literally a fascinating individual as a mixed martial artist.
Yeah, I mean, people just don't become amazing suddenly, right? This is stuff that takes time. And so when, you know, when I was grappling with DJ, when I was on the top of the mountain at that time, like, I mean, he was amazing. And you knew that his time to shine was still to come. And granted, the size difference between the two of us is, it's not like we're just squaring off and doing a bunch of sparring that way. That is not neither beneficial to me or him, because even if he can give me a hard way to go, it's not going to give me the look I need for whoever it is that I'm fighting anyway. But there are certain drills that you can do. And I remember this one day specifically. I had been on the mats training for some time, and we were doing guard drills. And so, you know, I'm tired. We've all been on the mat for several hours, and then so they put DJ in my guard, and it was an open guard thing. And man, it was like that line from Talladega Nights, like, man, he's like spider monkey, just kind of, you know, doesn't quit moving. I mean, he just chain movements and guard passing. And I was trying to get a hold of him just so I could just like squeeze him and just like close my guard just to get him to stop so I could breathe for a minute. And, you know, one of those like last rounds that we were doing. And so you just knew, like I knew at that time, like his time was coming. And of course it came.
You know, George and I, in doing this show for so long, we come across matchups every week. Every week they're shuffling them. But this one stands out. And it stands out for one reason for me, is if you were to break it down and go through all the different scenarios of how this could end, they all kind of make sense. That's how good both fighters are. If we were to wake up and say, DJ submitted him, you'd go, yeah, that makes sense. If you woke up and you heard Rice knocked him out, that makes sense too.
Yeah.
There's so many things that can happen in this fight. Where do you think it falls in the landscape of greatest fight ever to be put on by one championship?
I'll just comment on what you said. You know, as part of the commentary team, my job is to come up with like keys to victory, right? Mm-hmm. So when the athletes walk out, like you'll hear me give what I think their keys to victory are. And it's quite difficult in some of these matchups, because it's like, well, I mean, you know, it's like, well, he may not have to secure a takedown in order to win, or he, you know, it's like, well, what is his key to victory? Well, it's like, well, if he wants to continue, like if Adriano wants to keep it standing, for example, use that long jab, use that footwork, use that in and out movement, right? And so there is a recipe for him to win that from a standing position. But obviously, like, you know, he's got a lot of size on DJ. So if he wanted to pursue the takedown, then, you know, it's like, okay, well, use that long jab, bait him in. DJ has to cover a lot of distance. And then, you know, once he explodes forward with his movement, because we saw that in the first two fights, like you can secure the takedown. Like, so there, depending on what strategy you decide to implement as a camp is, or what your plan A, plan B is what my keys to victory are. But, you know, I got to reduce these to like three keys to victory in essence. Mm-hmm. And so it can be, you know, quite difficult to do. I think that, you know, as far as like fights go, this is probably, you know, one of the greatest fights that we've done. We've had other trilogies. There. I'm trying to think of what other trilogies that we've had, but I mean, even still, I think like this one, another one that comes to mind would be like
Angela Lee and Yang Jing Nong.
Zhang Jing Nan is another good one. Or even the Atomweight Grand Prix winner. When I think it was Stamp, when Stamp fought Angela, you know, she had to go through a lot to get there. And then Angela, of course, had her baby and was absent for over a year from year and a half or whatever it was from competition. But she was a long time out, right? And it takes a lot to bounce back from that. And I had spoken to Angela on my podcast, you know, because as men, I don't know what it's like to give birth and then try to compete after that. I remember interviewing Bethany Hamilton and she was like talking about how she was surfing and like breastfeeding in between heats of a surfing event. And I'm just it's amazing that you're able to do that, because you know that just takes literally the baby is pulling life force out of you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like it can't be easy for someone like Angela to, you know, give birth and then bounce back and fight the top competitor of a group of eight hungry women. Like, you're fighting the beast, right? And so, you know, that was another great matchup that the organization put on. So there's been a few, but this one definitely ranks up at the top as well.
I did want to ask you about training. We learn a lot of lessons from you guys. One lesson we learned from you in particular was one day on an interview with you, you explained to us, you said, guys, you don't know what it's like to run in the snow in Cincinnati, how much that sucks.
Yeah.
And how much being away from family sometimes. In this particular case, one thing that these guys have to deal with is altitude, right?
Mm.
That can kill fighters sometimes. I know DJ's been out there. He's been working as much as he can. But can you talk a little bit about how that can factor into this fight?
Yeah, and Adrian has been out there as well. Mm. So if both athletes go out there and acclimate, then it should not be a factor in essence. And I don't know which of our roster has arrived early and which have not, but it will become a factor for those who haven't arrived. I remember the first time that I traveled to Denver, the first time that I'd ever experienced altitude in my life, because Cincinnati sits at like 400 feet elevation. You know, obviously Denver, Mile High Stadium, we're sitting at a base level of 5,000. Then once you start hiking up mountains from there, it only gets higher, right? And I remember I was like hiking up this mountain. I'm walking up the mountain and I'm like, I'm out of breath. And I'm like, man, I'm better shaped than this. Like, what the heck is wrong with me? And I had not accounted for the altitude. And then from there, the first time that I traveled to Salt Lake City, I know you guys remember Jeremy Horn. Did a lot of work with Jeremy Horn, and I was in Salt Lake, and the altitude there I think is like between 4 and 4,500, not too terribly high really, but man, you start hitting that go button and trying to grapple it like peak levels, and it can be quite difficult when everybody else is used to going at with that reduced oxygen, which is why in my career there was a part of time where I actually purchased an altitude tent so that I could sleep with hypoxic air.
Kamaru Usman and Leon Edwards fought in Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. They definitely said they felt it.
Rockhold felt it
against Paulo Costa, and the bare knuckle guys were there just this past weekend. Ben Rothwell, remember him?
Yep.
He was there a month. He said, I didn't want to take any chances.
Absolutely.
I needed to make sure the air quality, because if you'll recall, when Cain Velasquez fought Fabricio Werdum, Cain went 2 weeks out, and he only wanted to go 1 week out, but they insisted, and he goes, I'll go two. Werdum was there 2 months.
Yeah.
He says, it's air quality. He goes, it's the altitude. It's the food. It's the water. So the longer you're there, the better. I'll be curious to find out who's been there longer between DJ and Adriano, and because that might make a difference.
Yeah, I don't know who arrived first, but I know they've both been on scene for quite some time. But I'll say this to that point, when I was competing, even if I fought in Vegas, for example, out here, mm-hmm. where you have the dry desert air, I would always like to get out here as early as possible, and I didn't do it every single camp, but I would try to arrive certain days ahead of time, just so I could acclimate to this dry air. Because like, if you're not used to being from here, and you probably have friends that have talked about this, like you'll wake up and like your nose will be like almost bleeding,
yes.
from it being so dry. And so it just takes some time for the body to acclimate to that.
That's funny you mentioned that. Our mom is actually, she's visiting and she's suffering nosebleeds for the exact same reason. So I do want to ask you something though. So both guys have a win over each other, right? What about the momentum? Do you feel like DJ maybe carries a little bit more momentum because he was the last one to get the victory?
I can make a case for both guys. Really, I could. That always helps that DJ was, since he won the last one, he was able to like he carries the momentum. But on the other hand, if you go back and watch the first couple rounds of the second match, mm-hmm. and look at Marias's footwork, and I'll be talking about some of this on commentary as well, but like when I watch his footwork, like he was still controlling that range really well and giving, like it was difficult for DJ to like hone in on him. And given the height difference, like DJ has to make these bigger and bigger commitments. And that's what happened. Like he started making these bigger commitments in the first fight, and then he ended up getting caught as he came in to close, tried to close a combination, and then Adriano caught him. And so, but you see this in the second match, but however, when he finally caught Adriano the second time, he was real calculated on his movement in that time. So, it's like Adriano could go into that with the confidence, like I can make some micro adjustments here and focus on that and, unfold that kind of game plan. Whereas DJ on the other hand is like, you don't get to that level without not knowing how to bring some new changes to the game or whatever. So I could make an argument both ways that both of these guys could have kind of some momentum mentally in their head.
In the co-main event, we have Road Tang Jip Munyang. He's going to be fighting Edgar Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that fight? We saw DJ against Road Tang in that hybrid fight, which was excellent. I don't know whose idea that was,
yeah,
but that guy should get a bonus.
Yeah. The you know, where they started off with Muay Thai and MMA. Yeah. I love that matchup. DJ, I really thought he wouldn't want to mix it up as much and just get to the MMA. He wanted to mix it up. That guy is not scared of anything. Yeah. Shame he might retire, by the way. I don't know. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, we can talk
what
about
this co-main event?
Well, back to the DJ and the DJ Rautang match. Like, I thought the same thing when I was watching the match. Like, he was just not hesitant about standing there and kind of starting to trade with him. And I'm thinking, like, what are you doing, man? Just,
exactly.
Just get at least get through these first 3 minutes. And you know, if you don't finish it in the MMA round and you want to play for the second three, okay, perhaps. But yeah, he was not shy, and that's Rautang's not a guy you want to do that with. Hell, I mean, you guys have seen him, and he's tough too, right? I mean, Rautang is the beautiful thing about Rautang as a fighter is that he looks like he's just savage. You know, he'll let you hit him in the chin, and they call me Iron Man for a reason. But then you see other matches where he's just completely untouchable, and he's very calculated, he's very precise, and very clean technique. He's not just someone who has a chin and just walks through a lot of damage. Sometimes he'll do that. And so the U.S. audience had been introduced to him a couple years ago when they were exposed to the Rautang versus Daniel Williams matchup, which was a great matchup, but Rautang definitely controlled that from start to finish. But Edgar Tabarez is a very accomplished athlete. He's coming in from Mexico, so big Cinco de Mayo shout out on him. And listening to some of the things he says about Rautang, he's talking about how calculated Rautang is. Like, he knows that Rautang is tough, and he can't just, you know, basically what he said is, like, Mexican fighters are known for that mentality of just coming forward and just, you know, continuing to press and walk through the storm and take a little bit of damage, give a little bit of damage. And he said, like, you know, I got to be more calculated than that with a guy like Rautang, because
this guy's precise.
Yeah. Well, not only is he precise, but he also has a chin of granite. So it's like almost like playing Russian roulette with a system like that. So, you know, he knows he has to be a bit more calculated. And so it's going to be interesting to see what game plan he brings to it. And that's going to be a fun one to watch.
Here's the one that I think is going to steal the show. Stamp Fairtex against Elise Anderson. Elise used to train a little bit at Extreme Couture. She is really, really good on the ground. Really tricky, man.
Oh, no.
But Stamp, of course, we know is an amazing striker. At this point, I don't even like hearing or saying it's a traditional grappler versus striker. They're all pretty well-rounded now. You know what I mean? And so now I believe it's who's deficiency is stronger than the others, because we know their strengths.
Yeah.
So can Stamp hang with Elise on the ground? Can Elise stand with Stamp? You know, I get those are the questions that I like to figure out.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, obviously, this is that classic on paper striker versus grappler matchup.
I don't like hearing that.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I said. It's on paper.
I wore the pink.
Listen,
what's going on over here?
You got to let me finish, man. Okay, you know, this is your show, but it's rude to cut people off, right? Even though you're wearing pink, he's got pink underwear on, though. He showed me. Yeah. Yes, I did see the pink underwear. So the thing about Stamp is, when you look at some of Stamp's matches, like the Rossinha matchup, she had there was a rematch there between the two of them, and the first one she tapped and was like, I didn't tap, and you know, that's not part of this discussion. But then she came back in the second time and ended up beating her and engaged with her on the ground and was happy to do so. Ended up on the ground with Rita Fogat. And was, you know, like controlling that matchup on the ground. So I have this sneaking suspicion, actually, that obviously the path of least resistance for Stamp to win this is keeping it standing, you know, clearly. But I don't think she's going to be shy about going to the ground with Elise. Now, whether or not that's the smartest decision, we've seen Stamp just leaps and bounds improve in her grappling. But, you know, Elise is on a different level on the ground. And she does the thing about Elise is she does a good job actually fighting when she's damaged. Like, I can't remember which opponent it was, but she got dropped and then was able to lock that triangle on in the first round of that match. That's so tough. She's like, yeah, she's a tough competitor as well. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, because I have this suspicion that Stamp is not going to shy away from the groundwork with her.
One is loaded with a lot of talented females at 115. Mm-hmm. In that area, that Grand Prix you guys had was awesome. I'm a fan of Denise. I think she could be a star. I forget how to pronounce the last name.
Zamboanga.
The Filipino young lady.
She just fought.
I really like her. Elise, Jean-Jinan, Angela, Stamp. Really, really a lot of talent. So I'm really looking forward to that matchup for sure.
Yeah.
You got Roberto Soldic. Didn't get to do the debut. This is the debut coming over from KSW. We got Sage Northcutt after 4 years. Can you talk about those fights and what people should look for with those guys. Well, we're familiar with Sage, but maybe start with Roberto.
Yeah, I mean, so Soldich was the biggest free agent signing to MMA in recent years, and he came into one and technically debuted, but was fouled. With the groin shot. So we really, I don't know, what did we get to see, like 55 seconds of him or something like that, and he couldn't continue. And obviously that would be disappointing to him, but you know, he comes in with high accolades, and you watch this guy, and he, on film, he lives up to all the hype. And so it's going to be interesting matchup with him and Katistam, who is our former welterweight champ. And I like Katistam's style. It's funny, like, you know, I've always kind of thought of Katistam as a grappler somewhat, but he's really like a Muay Thai guy. And so, you know, this will be an interesting matchup because Soldich is very explosive on the feet. And, you know, it's Croatia, but even like his look and his style somewhat mimics a Miracle-Cro-Cop style. And, you know, once he pulls the trigger on that leg, like it's just devastation follows typically. But Katistam has this like kind of metronome pace to himself and is capable of pulling off these victories and close quarter elbows and things of that nature. So this is going to be a fun matchup to watch because Katistam's tough too. So even if Soldich is, you know, lives up to the hype and is able to start control this match the way that most people might predict he would, I don't think Katistam's going away very quickly either. And so, you know, he'll be there in the later rounds and you got to be careful about that.
That's going to be a fun fight to watch. Yeah. Sage, 4 years since Cosmo Alexander finished him, broke some bones in the face.
Yeah.
Is this more of just a mental and psychological comeback versus the physical? I mean, the guy's always in shape, but... Yeah. 4 years. What was there? Just more follow-up surgeries that happened behind the scenes? Do you know why there was such a long delay here?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what surgeries he had to have like post the initial work. I know that when I went to see Sage in the hospital just to, you know, like I'd met Sage before. We weren't great friends or anything, but I just wanted to stop in and, you know, because I've been in that situation.
That's tremendous that you did that.
It's not really. I mean, I appreciate that, but it's like, it's the human thing to do.
Well, a lot of fighters get in that ambulance, go, and that's it. Like everyone else is at the party or at the this or at the that. Yeah. And I've heard stories about some even just kind of getting left behind, but for an official to go in and check on them, that's tremendous.
Yeah. I'm not much of a partier anyway, but with that particular shot, like, you know, him transitioning it over and everything. And it was a, you know, pretty devastating shot that, sure. You know, like the injuries were fairly severe.
Cosmo was no joke, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, I don't know, he just broke an arm and had to get casted or something, you know, and he's going to in and out. So he spent some time there. So I stopped in. But I don't know what follow-ups he had to have. I'm not sure of the medical procedures and whatnot that followed. But with that, like, yeah, I would imagine some of this is a bit of a mental exercise for him. I know that, like, after I lost my match to Anderson Silva, I was a little gun shy in that first match back until I got hit in the face one time. I'm like, oh yeah, that's what it feels like. Even though I had sparred and, you know, been hit a couple times sparring, but still, it's just like I can remember when I was like slipping and I was overcompensating on my slips, like slipping way too far outside of the punch. And you know, that's extra time. Like if you slip 3 extra inches outside of the punch, it's time and milliseconds matter in fights. And so these are big deals. So I can just remember like moving my head all over the place. And finally, like midway through that round, I started settling in. I think that was my Jason McDonald matchup. So yeah, some of that will be a bit of a mental exercise for him, but this is not an easy matchup, much like the Jason McDonald matchup was not an easy matchup either. That guy's a killer. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's coming back, this Mujtaba that he's competing against, like this guy is, he's legit as well. And so this is going to be a fun one to watch. And Sage, obviously, like he's an amazing athlete. You see this guy, what he can do acrobatically and everything. So, you know, if he performs the way that he can and should and gets his head moving and puts his combinations together, this will be a good match to watch because Mujtaba's a tough guy.
Can he dunk a basketball now, George? Do you remember we gave him that challenge? It was getting close, right?
I think so.
I think Sage would probably do better. He probably would. It would be easier for him to do like a spin kick dunk with his foot than to actually jump up and touch it with his hand. Like, I'm not kidding. Yeah. He's going to do some sort of aerial twist dunk with his feet.
I'm going to blow you away right now. Guess who can dunk that you would never think can dunk?
You?
I guess I set myself up for that one. Roy Nelson.
Really? Yeah.
Roy Nelson can dunk.
You know what? I mean, in a weird way, it doesn't shock me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's only about 6 feet. you know, but he's a pretty good athlete and he can dunk a basketball.
Well, it's like my Monty Cox was my manager, and we just talked about this story the other day. We went to play a basketball one day, and Monty, like, you know, he played ball, like, and he's from Indiana, and so. And I knew he was a decent player, but man, we got out, like, he hadn't picked up a ball in probably a decade or something, and he was out of shape and everything. He ended up pulling a calf that day, so it made for an even funnier story. But I think he pulled the calf after he probably, I don't know, sunk like 15 three-pointers in a row or something. Wow. We played a game of 2-on-2.
Got a shot, huh?
Yeah, it was like him and Jens Pulver versus me and Kerry Shaw, one of my training partners at the time, yeah.
The meat truck or something?
Yeah, like yeah, exactly.
I remember Kerry. Yeah. Nice, all right. Here's a couple more studs on the card. You guys really, really stacked this card.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, this card.
Song, yeah. Former
Ong La,
two division champ,
mm-hmm.
fighting from Myanmar, right? Did I say that right?
Yeah, he's Myanmar.
Holy cow, that country, by the way, is going through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Follow on the support that he's had for his people. He's beloved over there.
Yeah.
And RDR, I call him Reynard de Ritter. He's also fighting on the card. But can you talk about these matchups?
Yeah, no. Ong Law's fighting Phan Rong. And, you know, both these guys are, I've known Ong for a long time, and he's tough. Like, he's resilient. And Phan Rong, they're both really well-rounded MMA athletes. You know, this is about, they both have a similar skill set. And, you know, you can get into who's better at what. And, but this is really about coming into this match and just imposing your will, because like the Adriano and Demetrius Johnson match, like, this is one where I could see, like, oh, well, you know, Ong Law won by knockout, or, you know, Phan Rong won by decision or whatever. Like, I could, you know, really see this going either way based on their skill sets. And the RDR matchup, Rainier versus,
he's something else on the ground, man.
Yeah, and this is it's a grappling match against Ty Rotolo, and I'm interested in watching this because one of the things I haven't seen a ton on is the fact that RDR grappled Andre Galvao, and
I heard about that.
Yeah, that was an interesting match for us, and did a great job grappling Andre on Andre's terms, basically. And there was a lot of talk at that time. Like, RDR was like, hey, I came to your world and did your thing, so why don't you come to mine and let's do an MMA match together. But
which he's done before.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so it's
fair, that's a fair.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'll watch that. Like, I want to watch that as a fan. But he's grappling Ty Rotolo, which is, you know, the Rotolo brothers, and Cade is one of our champions right now. But they both come from Andre's school. So it's Andre's protege that now RDR is grappling, and so it'll be interesting to watch how this one unfolds. That's what has me intrigued about that matchup.
So I know we're getting ready to wrap here soon, but I did want to ask you a question about your position here with ONE Championship. So anybody that has been to a ONE Championship overseas, it's a huge event, okay? Yeah. Coming here to the United States, things are a little bit different, right? And I have to imagine they probably leaned on you. Rich, what do you, you know, you've been a part of so many events here in the United States. What's one way we can kind of grab this audience and hold on to them? Really just make that great first impression. What do you think are some of those intangibles that American fans are going to fall in love with ONE Championship?
Honestly, I don't think they needed to lean on me for that, because the events that we've put on are resonating well with the U.S. audience. You know, we have, like, we've talked about Stamp and Rod Tang. We have overseas athletes that are transcending cross border to the U.S. with their fan base, and we've always put on a great show. And I think that's the secret sauce, is if you come to a ONE Championship event live and you see the huge LED screen and the ramp walkout and the customized computerization that we do with the entrance and the music and the graphics, and then of course you mix that with the fact that you're not just watching MMA, you're watching Muay Thai and kickboxing and grappling, and we sprinkle a little bit of that in there. And in the Muay Thai that you're watching, it's in 4-ounce gloves. Then you have the rule set differences.
Knees and kicks.
Yeah. The judging
over 25 or 15, right?
Yeah. And so, the judging as a whole makes a big difference. The way that we score the matches, which just pushes the fighters for looking for finishes. And that's part of the reason why we have such a high finishing rate. So when you start combining all these things together, along with, and I'll say this, and this kind of, like, I don't know, maybe this is just me plugging our hydration protocol. Like, I'm a big fan of that. And I really believe that the hydration protocol helps these athletes output at a higher percentage than when you're sucking yourself down like I did in my career. And all these things, they little by little, they make differences. And when you watch an event like this, the people that come to First Bank to see this are going to be wowed, because, you know, you always say from an entertainment perspective, this is like going to a rock concert meshed with a sporting event.
For sure. Yeah, the hydration system, I subscribe to it too. We just had Geronta Davis versus Ryan Garcia, mm-hmm. and I think that hydration may have slowed down Garcia as well. Sure. Not to make an excuse, because that dude, Davis, can punch. I don't know if you saw the big boxing match.
Yeah, I didn't watch the whole match. I saw some of the highlights. He had clauses
regarding hydration as well, and you could only hydrate to a certain amount. I know you guys have a different one where this is throughout the camp. The fighter has to keep a certain amount of hydration in their body so that they don't do the depletion, right?
Yeah.
The water loss.
Well, yeah. I mean, we don't really do anything. I don't want to misrepresent our system. We don't do anything during the camp as much because all the dehydration comes like in the last week in mm-hmm. essence anyway. Like when I was competing, I would start water loading about 2 weeks before my weigh-in. Mm-hmm. And I would water load 3 gallons of water a day. And then you end up stripping it out during the week of the event, mm-hmm. right? So, we're there on the week of the event to test weight, to test our hydration. We test our hydration and weight before the fight. And then we also test hydration and weight after the fight to make sure there's not like significant weight gains. And so that's the way that the system is intended. So you're intended to walk around at your natural weight, which I would absolutely love because weight cutting itself becomes its own event. Like during fight week, like cutting weight was as stressful, if not more stressful for me than the fight itself. It's like, you're just going to
cost the card too.
Right. Like
cost the fight.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going into most of my fights. I'm going to most of my fights thinking like, I'm going to win this fight anyway, but man, damn, sitting in this sauna for 2 hours mm-hmm. off and on, like that sucks.
That's why those 205 fights you had, probably were welcomed. You know,
yeah.
You had a few of those, right?
Yeah,
and even a 195, I think.
Yeah, there was a couple of them. Like after I lost to Silva the second time, and then I had Travis Luter fight at 185, and then it was clear that they weren't going to give me a rubber match because I hadn't won one. So at that point, I was like kind of a Ronin, just looking, you know. And so I was like, well, let's move back to 205, and then they needed some catchweight fights and so I just kind of ended up fighting like bigger name people. But at 205, it was nice on the cutting side of things, except for example, when I fought Forrest, you know, I cut?
At the Mandalay Bay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I cut like 4 pounds, and he cut like 40. So, you know, I could remember looking at him like when we faced off at the weigh-ins and we were about the same size. And I swear, when you rehydrate, like your spine even like lengthens or something, like the compression of the spine with the cartilage, you have more water in those things. Because I just remember looking at him in the octagon and I was like, holy crap, like this guy just got 3 inches taller overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we brought up your name the other day, and we may have asked you this before, but just a little clarification. In the Liddell fight, before you knocked him out, if you make it to the corner, would they have stopped the fight because of the broken bone? Or do you think, were they even aware? And would you have been able to go, I'm okay? Or how bad was it, the fracture?
Well, it was the ulna, so it was the smaller bone. I always make a joke because people are like, man, you're so tough fighting with a broken arm. I'm like, well, technically, I still had one bone that wasn't broken in my arm, which was the radius, but the smaller bone in the arm was broken. It was clean break all the way through. And so when I got the, this cord keeps getting stuck. When I got the x-ray done after the fight, like the doctor said, well, we can try casting this and take a risk on it just healing on its own. But the break is so bad that if it doesn't heal properly, then we're going to have like wait 6 weeks and have to re-break the arm and put a rod in. And I was like, I'll risk it. So, and it, fortunately it healed properly. So yeah, I mean, you know, the break was there. I don't think they were even aware of it. Other than if you knew me, you could see me a couple times in the match, like kind of shake my hand out, right. And like my boxing coach Rob knew right away. He's like, yeah. Rob and Neil both like, yeah, his arm's broken. And so when I came back, I would have fully intended on getting off that stool and just continuing to fight because in that round, there was nothing stopping me. And that's when Joe asked me. I don't think anybody knew, so I don't think they would have known that it was broken. And besides, it wasn't like my arm was flopping around. So if you break a finger, they have no reason to stop a match over a broken finger, right? Like, mm-hmm. So, like I said, I still have one.
It came up in a fight recently, and it just reminded me of it.
Yeah, so, no, I would have gotten off stool. But I will say this. There is a video on YouTube of them removing the glove or the tape from this hand 15 minutes after the fight when there is no adrenaline.
Agony.
Lord of mercy. I made a joke. The doctor's like, you might want to sit down. And I was like, because I just won, you know. So I'm like, I'm high on adrenaline. And I'm like, I was like, doc, it's my arm, not my leg. Like, my legs are fine. I can stand here. And then so he starts cutting, and they couldn't get through the tape. They had dull scissors. And I mean, I'm like gritting this out. And my coach was standing there like trying to stabilize my bones because like you could feel the bones were like just doing this. Eesh. Yeah, it was bad. And yeah, and so so anyway, long story short, I looked at the doctor. I was like, okay, let me just sit down a second, because they had to cut this thing off. So I think I would have been able to survive a minute and keep that adrenaline going and been fine for the second round. But I will say this, though. There was one point where when Chuck took me down, I tried to post to get up, and my arm kind of like gave way on me. And so I had to go to the other side. And in getting up, left my nose exposed, my neck exposed. And yeah, I was like, there's a couple parts in that fight. So, you know, who knows? I was glad to get the knockout right as that 10-second call came.
After this, I'm getting lunch. I'm going to rewatch that fight now that I know all this intel.
What are you ordering for lunch again?
Chili dogs.
Yeah. Chili dogs. I thought we said something about egg whites.
Fight night 10, Johnson versus Marias 3. It's this Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Great fights, including this main event with Demetrius Johnson and Adrian Marias. Our guest, Rich Franklin. Rich, executive for ONE Championship. He'll be on the call. And thank you so much for stopping by MMA Junkie Radio. We always appreciate you.
Always good to be on the show with you guys.
Thank you. All right, folks. With that, we're out. Go out and be a champion.